Welcome to the Midday. I'm Stephanie Elkins in for Norman Gilliland today, and I have a special guest in the studio this afternoon, composer, arranger, violinist, and piano. Nicholas Buck is here in Wisconsin, not in the capacity of any of those worthy musical occupations, but as yet another on that long list of accomplishments. He is a conductor. Welcome, Nicholas.
It's fantastic to be here, Stephanie. My first time to Madison, so I'm very excited.
Have you been in Wisconsin before?
I haven't. I've been as far as Milwaukee and
that's
Minneapolis.
Close. That's close, and
Minneapolis. Yeah. Well, actually, it is in the state. I haven't been to Madison, though. This is my first time in the capital.
Well, we're glad to have you, and you're here for a very exciting project, at least for those of us who are fans of Harry Potter. So tell us what you're doing.
So we're here with the Madison Symphony Orchestra to do Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone live in concert. So basically, people can come along to the Overture Center and watch the film in a giant screen that hangs above the orchestra while we play the score live. And we're not just doing the music, it's the whole film. And it's quite a new kind of concept that's really taken off in the last, I guess, 5 or 10 years, this idea of presenting a film live where the soundtrack has been essentially stripped out of the film. So dialogue and sound effects are still all there, retained for us to enjoy, but the music, musical score is performed by the orchestra, and it really brings this sort of three-dimensional aspect to the presentation.
So the dialogue and the sound effects, all of that is still there.
Yeah, they're coming through the speakers.
I guess I didn't understand that.
And we sort of, I guess, mix the music in with those elements. So we have a live sound mixer. I mean, think of it like, you know, the 21st century version of opera. You know, back in the day, people would, you know, the entertainment of the day, people would go along, they'd see live performers, you know, in a dramatic theatrical context. You'd have the musicians in the pit, you know, and the dialogue would be coming from the stage. It's kind of the same thing. But instead of a movie theater where it's pumped up in surround sound, you've kind of got that natural acoustic surround sound of the orchestra. And it's a great way to show off, I guess, the power of film music, which is really why we're here to do this.
Well, the power of film music is it's very, very powerful. And I think children and teenagers don't realize that they're seeing all this classical, they're hearing this classical music when they go to films, when they play video games. They're getting exposed to this. And here you can see how it's made. You can watch the orchestra while it's happening. Do you get a lot of families and kids in the audience?
Look, we get an incredible amount. I mean, you know, you talk to any local symphony orchestra around the world these days and say, look, what are your biggest challenges? And the common answer you will always get is finding a new audience. You know, they've got their staple of regulars, subscribers, whatnot, but getting people in who wouldn't typically go and see their local symphony orchestra has always been a real struggle. And, you know, there's education programs and POPs programs and whatnot. And I guess this is just an extension of that. You know, people love movies these days of all ages, but especially kids and teenagers. So to take something like Harry Potter, which itself is its own juggernaut of entertainment. I mean, people go nuts for this stuff. To package that up and be able to present it in a musical context, highlighting the music, will absolutely bring in people. First of all, because they love Harry Potter, and two, because I'm pretty sure most people would be able to know some of the music of Harry Potter. You know, Hedwig's theme, some of those really iconic musical moments from the film. You know, part of John Williams' incredible score.
Well, let's talk about the music a little bit. John Williams was nominated for a Grammy for that score, and when we were getting ready to go on the air, we were talking about leitmotifs, and really, that's just a more fancy word for a theme for a character or a part of the, you know, can even be a place or
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this concept of leitmotif is rooted in classical music. It was sort of pioneered by people like Wagner in all his operas, where individual musical motifs or themes would be associated with mainly a character, or sometimes a place. And look no further than John Williams' iconic score to Star Wars, for example, where you have, you know, themes for Luke, Princess Leia, Darth Vader, the Empire, the Rebels. It's ginormous. And John Williams really was the guy to bring that back to Hollywood in the 70s. You know, some of the golden age composers of the 30s, Eric Wolfgang Korngold, you know, schooled in Viennese classical music, came over, you know, and brought that kind of context of leitmotif with them. But it kind of died in the 60s, where films were populated by, like, song soundtracks. You know, think of things like The Sting, you know, used a lot of, you know, Scott Joplin piano rags and whatnot. American Graffiti, George Lucas film, had, you know, pop songs. The Graduate, you know, Simon Garfunkel music. John Williams really heralded that return to the symphony orchestra, and he's carried it basically in his entire career through to today. You know, Harry Potter's
dozens and dozens,
a good 30 years later than Star Wars and Jaws, and he's still, yeah, really taking that element of musical themes to accompany characters.
Why don't we hear one of the ones that's in the film?
Absolutely. So we'll hear a bit of music here. This is called Harry's Wondrous World, which is essentially a bit of the end credits of Harry Potter. And it's great because we really get that not only that sense of magic that Williams creates in the music, but we'll hear some of the thematic material which he uses throughout the score.
Harry's Wondrous World, from the soundtrack to the first Harry Potter film, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, as we know it here in the States.
It is wondrous, isn't it? It's orchestrationally, it's the sound of magic. There's no really other way to describe it. All those sort of flighty woodwinds, yup, bop, bum, bum, doo, you know, swirling strings. It's John Williams has this knack, probably better than a lot of the other film composers out there, of really putting a sonic signature on all his films. And I'm sure there's plenty of listeners out there who have been to some of the Harry Potter theme parks, which has sort of opened up in the last few years. And, you know, apart from the magnificent sets and structures and buildings that they have there, you know, of Hogwarts and whatnot, the thing that really cements, you know, the magic and fairy tale element of this is all the music that they blast through the speakers as you walk through there and you walk through the castle, and it's John Williams' music that really adds that extra layer. So it's a very powerful thing.
Well, and he's so adept at writing these themes. And I heard a fellow with Warner Brothers Films, an executive in the music part of things, talking about it might think that it's easy to come up with those iconic themes, and it's really not. That's the part that takes a lot of genius.
Yeah, and often trial and error. I mean, I've heard John Williams speak about how frustrating it has been for him to think of really simple ideas like the Raiders March, Indiana Jones. Dun-da-da-da, dun-da-da. He went through, you know, heaps of permutations just to get the right kind of combination of notes that sounds so simple and effortless, as if it was the easiest thing to write, when in actual fact, you know, it takes him a while to find these things. But once they're there, they are genius. They're wonderful.
And Harry Potter has themes for Harry and for Hedwig.
Yep. And there's even more kind of larger scale themes, like there's sort of like a family theme, which is like, you know, the camaraderie of Hermione, Ron and Harry and all their friends, almost like a friendship theme that really comes back, you know, and really played through the end credits. You know, Voldemort gets his own theme. There's sort of identifiable themes for like the big Quidditch match in the middle. So everything here, from characters to kind of locations and events, the music really carries it there. And of course, you know, he builds on that for the other films in the series. And then some of the other composers that took on, many people may not know this, that John Williams only contributed music to the first three Harry Potter films. And from films four through to eight, three other composers sort of shared the reins there. And they all, you know, referenced Hedwig's theme, that magical da da dun dun da dee da, and then sort of put their own stamp on it. But he really laid the groundwork for it.
Let's hear that one. That is so magical. And is there a challenge for you in interpreting such an iconic piece of music?
Well, look, the hardest thing, I guess, for the conductor and the orchestra in these live concerts is the fact that we can't play our own tempos. So,
Oh, right.
I mean, you know, as much as we'd love to do an accelerando there or slow down in this and really milk the strings for this bit, the film doesn't stop. The film doesn't slow down. You know, if you're doing a live opera or ballet, maybe the, you know, there's a bit of flexibility in the timing. But here we have to move, you know, they're flying on broomsticks. They're not slowing down. So to marry and synchronize the music and the images is actually the most challenging thing. And for a conductor, you know, I get a little TV screen in front of my conductor's podium, which has all these flashes and stripes, and people in the audience always get very interested. But they're basically old school relic digital versions of old school techniques that they used to use to basically synchronize film, where they used to put a hole punch in a reel of film, and in a frame of film, which would create this white flash every time it went through the projector. And we basically have digital versions of that, which help the conductor watch his music, watch his screen, and keep in the right place. So it's very, very complicated, very challenging, but when it works, it's magic.
Let's listen to Hedwig's theme, and what are we going to hear here?
So the iconic thing you'll hear here is an instrument called the celeste, or the celeste, as they say in America. And that's like a magic, almost like fairy tale toy piano kind of sound, almost like bell-like. And that really is the flighty, magical sound of Hedwig. And it sounds like magical fairy dusk flittering through the air.
And if you're not familiar with the stories, Hedwig is an owl.
He is.
Hedwig's theme from Harry Potter. Wow.
Great, isn't it?
It's amazing, exciting music.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so brilliant because everyone in the orchestra gets a workout. You know, it starts with the tiny celeste instrument, and then by the end, trumpets, horns, strings, they're all going for it, hell for leather, whatever the expression is, and sweating. Trust me, the orchestra sweats lots in this one.
They do get
they
a
get
workout.
Yeah. They earn their checks.
And when you're playing in the context that you will be, does the audience get to see the orchestra? Are you lit?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, there's a balance between being dark enough so that they can, you know, see the screen and whatnot. But yeah, that will absolutely be seen, and especially in the end credits, you know, the lights come up and you can really see them going for it. And
so you've done a few of these before. Are there kids in the audience? Do they clap? How do they respond to the music?
Well, usually at the start, I actively encourage them to cheer and boo and hiss for their favorite characters and the villains. People always pick houses and cheer whenever certain houses do certain things. People dress up. So people really get into it. And as we were saying earlier, it's just a great way to bring in a different audience, you know, that wouldn't normally go and see their local symphony orchestra. So if you live in Madison, come along. This will be a weekend to remember. I guarantee it.
It certainly will be. And the details are on our website at WPR.org. Looks like most of the shows are sold out, but there's a show on Saturday afternoon at 2 that's been added recently, and those are available, and you can find details again at WPR.org. Just look for June 24th for that particular date, and you'll see a link to all of the details. Well, Nicholas Buck, thank you very much. I know you're headed back to Australia. What's next for you?
I'm doing a George Michael tribute concert with the Sydney Symphony Orchestra next weekend. Two weekends time. So that'll be, again, something different, bringing in a different audience that wouldn't normally go to the Sydney Opera House. And it'll be a lot of fun.
And are you working on anything in terms of composing?
Yes, always got little projects on the go. I'm doing arranging a lot of music for a new video game concert, which will be coming to Japan and then hopefully the States next year. Which is all the music of Metal Gear. So,
terrific.
And look, video game music is another thing which we could spend an hour talking about.
Yes.
But it's, these days, you know, there's the budgets are huge, the orchestras are getting larger, and it's like film music. It's really glorious.
And it's bringing more kids in to hear wonderful orchestral music.
Yeah, sure is.
Well, thanks for what you do. Thank you for coming in and sharing your time and your vision and talent with us this afternoon. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.